Today, you go on Instagram, even if you're following one skin influencer, you know all the language that you have to know. Niacinamide and vitamin C and retinol and everything. Consumer obsession is always top-down. Founder is obsessed, the rest will be obsessed. And it's a reiterative exercise. And at some point, you will also realize, at least I realize, that customer obsession, jitna the founder will have the amount, the rest cannot have, but you have to have enough for the rest of the organization's DNA to be built. But analytical thinking, that's bottoms-up. You cannot teach it to someone. Hard work, bottoms-up. Teach it to someone.
To me, all of that is execution the moat then in your business?
So I think there are three moats and each have to kick in at the right time. I think in 0 to 1, product is the moat.
So how do you think about channels for your business? How do you prioritize them?
For us, I think the first segregation happens, is it an acquisition channel versus replenishment channel?
So Romita, coming back to this 1,000 crores, there's a 1,000 crore 20% EBITDA margin goal. It's not just ambitious, but it's very specific. So where does that come from? Hi everyone, welcome to the Z47 podcast. Today we have a very special guest with us, Romita, founder of Foxtail. Foxtail is a very fast growing direct-to-consumer skincare brand. It's perhaps one of the fastest growing brands today and growing sustainably without burning too much capital lead as well. We are very proud investors in Foxtail. So thank you, Romita. Welcome to our podcast.
Excited to be here. I've been seeing this for a very long time.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. So sorry for this. I should have done this much earlier, but better late than never. So
no, this is my VC days.
VC. Maybe for the audience, so we'll today unpack Foxtail's journey as a company is about 2.5 years old and they've clocked triple digit crores in revenues already on the path to profitability. So it's a very interesting story that we'll unpack today. But let's start with, Romita, your own journey. You're a young entrepreneur. You started this business. You went from college to investment banking to VC to starting up a business, right? It's not a very common path. So maybe tell us a little bit about how you thought about starting the business and that too in skincare. So let's start from there.
I studied at UCLA and right after that did banking. My major focus area was consumer tech. So I had started working very early with consumer tech brands like Airbnb, Uber, Instamart, Fashion Nova, etc. And I also knew my heart lies there because that's what I enjoyed the most. I understood I could contribute more than what I could contribute in other sectors. And I think the next step very naturally became to move towards a consumer-focused VC fund. And when I moved to India, that's what happened. I joined A91, which is largely consumer-focused VC fund, or at least the first 2 years were from that perspective. And to me, what happened those first 2 years, that from a banking perspective, I move more into a VC perspective on why to invest. So why certain markets make sense, why certain businesses make more sense in those markets. But more importantly, I had joined A91 when it was very new. So Hamara per portfolio exposure for us was relatively high, which also gave me a chance to relatively closely see how businesses are evolving. When we invested, they were 3 crores. When I saw them go from 3 to 10.
This is Sugar that you're talking about.
That was one of the portfolio companies.
Portfolio companies went to 10 portfolio companies.
Yeah. And even how they ended up scaling during that time, right? So I think, of course, as an analyst at a VC, I don't want to say that there was any contribution, but there was definitely a lot of observation, absorption that was happening. So to me, all of these, and today also, I keep thinking what triggered it. I think there was this, we talked right before this, I think there was this requirement or need at a very early stage of my life where I felt like I need to find something that fulfills me. As much as I enjoyed VC, the sense of fulfillment was not something that I was able to dot down on. And that started a different search. That started a search for finding the right answer 6 months in. And to me, I remember this, I've told you a few times that, you know, for me, it was, I said that I want to, what was very clear to me is that I'll get that sense of fulfillment from building a 1,000 crore brand with 20% EBITDA. So yes, I had found love for consumer brands. I got to observe a lot of journeys from very close and almost take a front seat at that. But I think somewhere in that journey of getting to know them to getting to observe them, I developed this want and need to build something that I can define as success, which was 1,000 crore consumer brand. why skincare was relatively simpler. And actually, there were three reasons. One is I needed for this a category that is high revenue, high profit. Of course, skincare falls beautifully into that. Second, I strongly believe that every founder can have two arbitrage. One, if you have the operational experience in the category. So a Unilever guy building something, of course, he has an arbitrage. I didn't have it. I was a banker, I was a VC. So it was always a bird's eye view to categories, not operational experience. But the other thing that I know that has a strong arbitrage for founders is being a power user in the category. Mm. Because then you solve for top 1% of the users. And that is something that skincare beautifully fell into. I often joke that I don't know ki bathroom mein harpic hai ki sar pe, but I exactly know what goes on my face, and I was still am a power user, but at that time I could very clearly know that, you know, this is a category where I understand what product works, why it works, not works. And third is some basic sense of PMF. And I think whatever work I did in the 4-5 years of experience that I had in finance, especially with brands, I realized that mereko kuch to chamakta hai, you know, customer ka nas in this category, which is not something that I could say about other categories. I had also been part of the Attenberg investment, few other investments. But I felt very strongly about the customers and their reasons to like and not like. So there was a certain sense of love and obsession that was very early at that point. And I think that demanded me to go deeper. And that was first. But the second, which I often now meet young founders and they ask me, I don't think I was ever a risky founder. I am not someone who will be like, man kiya kar liya. For me, it was very critical that, okay, there is some arbitrage, but it was so high level that there's no reason for anyone, for me to also believe there's a right to win. For me, I knew eventually it is going to be rigor that is going to create right to win. But what was very critical, that the gap is clear. So in the absence of a clear right to win, the gap would have ended up determining whether I will win this market or not. And that's where I spent almost 6 months, interviewed 1,000 women, 937 women, wo number bhoolta hi nahi hai, because each conversation was not that easy. I would go and stand outside malls, outside airports, multiple other things to try and talk to them. And waha se gap bahut clearly aaya that while there are a lot of consumer brands, especially in skincare, and they are coming every day, people are not able to build loyalty because what they are searching for is efficacy in their products and instant efficacy. And that is something that brands are not being able to provide for at the 300 to 500 rupees price point. Sure. And that is really where LTV is going to eventually get built. And that was reflected in the data. I had data of like 100 plus skincare brands. They were growing on the back of new launches. Hero products were not created versus a Fair and Lovely and Himalaya. They are all hero product stories, right? So that's where I was very clear that the problem statement and the gap is to create hero products, which is high revenue per SKU. And if we can figure that out, then we've taken a real problem statement and that will end up determining the right to win. And that's how it started. So there's not one specific answer, but there's a whole...
No, it's actually a fabulous story. And maybe we should have started from even your background. Like, it's such an inspirational story where you grew up in Ranchi.
Yeah.
From there, you went to study abroad to now getting an opportunity to work in some of the choicest of places to building this business in such a quick fashion. It's really something commendable. And I hope it's an inspiration to future builders as well. Picking on this, you know, consumer, you said that you understand the consumer pulse. So maybe tell us a little bit more about how it's changed, right? So when I was growing up as a kid, I used to see my sisters and mom and all use just that same either Ponds or Fair and Lovely. Yeah. To now, every woman's house will have dozens of products. So what's driving some of this, and maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, no, hopefully in a few hours, they only have Foxtail, all women. But there's a huge change. I think there are two things that I think is fundamentally happened. Social media, while we talk about the pros and cons, but in the last 10 years, social media has made the world actually democratic when it comes to information. So today, a woman sitting in Ranchi or Bombay or anywhere, till she has an Instagram, till she has a YouTube, she knows a Rihanna, she knows... Fenty. She knows their beauty is a brand that is with Selena. So because of the democratization of information that has happened and what has happened outside, the aspirational value of what you are using has gone way up. So for everything that people are picking up, there's a requirement for an aspirational value that they are able to get. There is a requirement that it can replicate what they are observing in social media in their life. So there is a certain requirement for brand experience that has changed fundamentally. From a skincare specific thing, it has also moment education has amplified because people are seeing what is happening abroad. So they are now not just looking at newspapers or print media to get knowledge. What they would have gotten after investing a lot of time into it, people are getting it through reels very quickly. Today, you go on Instagram, even if you're following one skin influencer, you know all the language that you have to know. Niacinamide and vitamin C and retinol and everything. So whether rightly placed or wrongly placed, information is amplifying and accelerating in a lot more, lot faster than it was happening 5-7 years back, even when I was in standard 11th and 12th, right? So what is now ending up happening is women are making more informed choices. So informed choices where you make the user, enable them, make them feel like they are empowered to make the decision rather than just saying, oh, this is a beauty product. Oh, this is a brightening product. They need to know why. They want to know how. And then giving it with a great brand experience. I think that those are two things that have fundamentally changed. And I think those are reasons that we were able to do what we were able to do, right? Like we always were communication first. We were always very transparency first. So it was not as simple as brighter skin. It was in how many days, how do we do it? But it's also the experience. The packaging was very critical for us. The way the website looks is a critical part of our user loyalty and user love story, right? So it's a combination of both. But yeah, that's how fundamentally it's changed versus the Pond's era.
And as you were thinking about starting in this space, did you worry about there are like hundreds of skincare brands and you know new ones keep popping up? So how did you think about entering into a cluttered market? Did that bother you at all?
I knew it's a cluttered market, but I also knew that there's a very clear right to win.
And gaps that you spoke about, that even though there are products, but gaps are not getting...
Yeah, so what I was trying to build, I very clearly knew that no one is trying to build. And if I'm able to build it in the next 2 years, I will have a clear moat in the market, right? Because it requires R&D, it requires DNA. It requires a certain amount of user understanding, but technical understanding of the products as well. So
for and me, that gap for you is effective skincare or efficacious skincare?
High efficacy products, instant efficacy products, not taking 3-4 weeks. So it's not a dermatologist, it's a lifestyle brand. So when you're using a product, can you give efficacy immediately and can you be able to resonate with the user with the brand experience? So it was both. I remember the first deck that I had shown you guys. It has three pillars. One is efficacy. Second is time to efficacy. But third is actual resonance with the user. So to me, all three were critical. And I knew that if I were able to crack that, LTV is what I was chasing. And I think that chase day zero was the same. Day minus 100 was the same. Today also it's the same. So I get asked this cluttered thing, right? Meko kabhi feel nahi hua, because I feel like in my head, I was doing, we had found something that would enable us.
And actually, I remember back in the day, one key thing that you used to, or you still measure, is what, even before launching a product, when you do testing, what percentage of people are going to repeat the purchase? And that was some like crazy 90-95%, right? That's how...
Even today, like prior to launching a product, it takes us 18 months, not just because formulation takes time. It's actually a year takes us to test the product across India, right? So we actually test the product on anywhere from 5,000 to 11,000 people before it launches. And they represent more than 400 skin types. They are not just dry, oily. They are different permutation and combination. Until we hit the 90% number repeated prior to launch, we don't launch
across the product. 400 skin types?
Across all skin types. So whatever cohort is segregated and... That gave the results, right? Like today, there are products which have unique customer retention rate of 70-80%, where people are actually paying and yet coming back through the year. People come back on certain products with such high loyalty. People don't come back on offers. They just come back on non-offers and end up buying the product. So, and that's not one product. That's not two products. That out of 18 SKUs, that 10 of our products which have higher than 50% unique user retention rate. So I think there was something that this way of testing repeat rate, that was the bet we were taking, that whether this will translate in real life or not. And I think that's translated quite beautifully. And that's an IP that we hold very close. It's exposed also not to a lot of people in the company, but it really works out for us in testing the product before launching the product.
So as you think back last 2-3 years, clearly it seems like this focus on products and R&D is one key pillar, which is why you're successful. What are one or two other things that you think are, which really make Foxtail stand out?
I think for me, it's been two things. Of course, products are the center of it, if I have to talk around it or outside it. One will be consumer obsession across the company. It's, and I often get asked, is product the real winner? Product is absolutely the trust builder. Mm. But to win the customer, when he is not, we are digital first brands. People can't try our product. So unless people have tried the product, you can't talk about product efficacy. Before that, it's about how you are able to talk to her. What do you do for her? But more importantly, in the market that we are, just one great product is not enough, right? It is the whole experience that they end up feeling when they are part of your ecosystem. In fact, I remember there was a time where our delivery days was 11 days. At that time, our M3 retention was close to 30%. We reduced it to 5, it went up to 45%. So that's the impact that delivery days had on customer. Nothing changed in the product. It was the same products. It's just the customer experience fundamentally changed. So everything is thought through. Jab wo kholta hai, toh, what does the consumer feel when she opens the box? Why does she want to see a woman's picture? Why do we have a women's picture in the first place? Why do we have a story? So customer obsession is one. Second is employees. I think employees is the, I don't know whether it's the right word or not, but it's the team that comes together to build it. Team, what ends up happening, and I, there are two things, right? Consumer obsession is always top down. Founder is obsessed, the rest will be obsessed. And it's a reiterative exercise. And at some point you will also realize, at least I realize, that customer obsession, jitna the founder will have the amount, the rest cannot have, but you have to have enough for the rest of the organization's DNA to be built. But analytical thinking, that's bottoms up. You cannot teach it to someone. Hard work, bottoms up, can't teach it to someone. So that is something that this team did. So I think, to me, what is very special about Foxtail is that office, is the team that came together to build it. Often I think we talk a lot about founders and co-founders. The real builders are the people who are coming together to build it, and their rigor ends up building it. So for Foxtail, it's definitely these two things that became our moat or our edge when we were going.
Actually, the energy in your office has always been infectious. So, and that I've seen time and time again. You can literally walk into an office and get a sense that company is good. So it's uncanny. But you know, on this moat, so you talk about products, how you've done some R&D, etc. There is a process, customer obsession. There is data analytics. By the way, even on analytics, for those who don't know, people think that consumer brand companies are more about brand product distribution. This company is actually about analytics, what they've done about at the back. So, to me, all of that is execution the moat then in your business? All of that put together is execution.
So I think there are three moats and each have to kick in at the right time. I think in 0 to 1, product is the moat. That helps to identify PMF. Once you have PMF, then execution rigor is the moat. Analytical thinking, how fast can you go? Can you start distribution channels, but can you start efficient distribution channels? How can you penetrate each of these channels? In fact, the first 2 years of our 100 crore, it comes from like 4-5 channels website. It's not that we have 20 marketplaces, 30 marketplaces. That means there's been rigor in getting penetration in each of these channels. So 1 to 10 is always execution rigor. And the good thing that happens with product is 0 to 1, if your product is great, product will always remain great. 1 to 10, when you get, because execution rigor takes time to become habit. But 1 to 10 is enough time for it to become habit. And then it continues to stay. And 10 plus is brand. That's where you start talking about brand building. That's when the brand needs to take over. Brand equity has to be larger than the scale of the business. So I think at different points, at different things, and at scale to the 1,000 crore vision, all three have to tie in together. We've moved from 0 to 1, 1 to 10. Now we are in the 10 plus journey.
You've got to a great point. What from here to that 1,000 crore journey path, right? So maybe talk us through new product lines, new businesses that you're thinking about. You just launched the body care business. How did you think about that versus why not do something else in, say, within the beauty and personal care space like color cosmetics or anything like that? So talk us through how you've thought about it. And maybe then we'll jump to channels and how you're thinking of scaling that.
So I'll talk first about why body care and why we was the first extension. Body care happened a lot more naturally to us. So what we started with, right? And while the company is operational for 2.5 years, our R&D has been operational for 3.5 years. So what we've built real strength is in R&D. Now, body care and skincare have the same R&D because it's the same product. It's just that the way the dermal delivery, how you end up delivering the products to your skin, because the skin outside the face is a little thicker. So the dermal delivery is different, but the technique of building the product, the thought process, the people who are building it are exactly the same. So there was a huge synergy between skincare, which is face care, and your body care. The second thing
but was... just to push on that, isn't the customer need very different? Like, you know, with skin, you will want anti-acne or you would want brightening and so on. Why is that relevant for body care?
So that was the second thing. And I think that was very critical. That is there a gap we are answering? And does the GTM make sense for us? And does it align with Foxtail's core offering? Where we are today in India, body care is a very small market. So it's not a business that I feel like that I think will be 1,000 crore. Body care will not be 1,000 crore. Body care, our win will be to build it to 200, 250 crore. And that's what we are aiming for with the body care range. But it will be a lot more profitable because its traction loyalty will end up being higher than face care.
And it's cross-sell to the same customer, all of that.
Unit economics works out from day zero, etc. But what was critical about body care is where we are today in India, which is where India is changing. Earlier, body care in India was all about just sensorial. So if you remember palm olive, if you remember Dove, they were all about how it smells. Does it smell like a leaf or a flower? With time, we've moved still to a little more better packaging. So then you have the Marks and Spencer's, Bed Bath & Body Works, all of those. There's still but a lot more focus on packaging plus fragrance. There is a very current wave where people are now starting to realize that body care and skincare are technically the same thing because it's skin. It's 90% of the skin of your body. So efficacy is critical. So it's not that it's been absolutely absent, but a lot more focus was on brightening throughout. So Santoor was a brightening body wash. Pears was for sensitive skin. So there was a certain evolution happening where people wanted to check your body care with your skin type, certain body care with the benefit you are able to deliver. But with higher education, that need is amplifying to orchestrate it with your skin type or your need gap. And that gives us a good gap to able to build it. Is it a huge market in India? Of course not. Like skincare is, face care is a 20,000 crore market. This is probably a 1,500, 2,000 crore market. So it's not a very big market, but it gives an opportunity to, without any additional fixed cost, expand. And it also lets us expand into AOV, gets higher wallet penetration into our current users, etc. So it was a very natural expansion. Why not color and hair care? I think I actually do, color and haircare both will be separate 1,000 crore top line. So the thought process that has to go, the GTM and the work cannot be any lesser than what went into launching Foxtail. But second, it's also R&D synergy is not directly there. So we've taken time to develop those synergies. It's not something that was easily replicable. It was also learned and we've been spending that quantum of time over the last 2 years. And we will see us, you know, what we will
as
do.
As Avnish would say, you just expanded your TAM again. So it's great. Quite excited about what's coming next. Fingers crossed that it has a similar journey that we've had so far. But talk about channels as well, right? These days, all consumer brands are thinking about, they all typically start with website, Amazon, etc. But quick commerce is now big. Offline, is the flavor of the season. Everybody says, let's try offline. But people have had mixed feedback. So how do you think about channels for your business? How do you prioritize them, especially from here on now?
For us, I think the first segregation happens, is it an acquisition channel versus replenishment channel? The second then ends up happening that is it a channel where digital first users are there? And hence, am I able to reach her? Even if she's not purchasing in those channels, if I'm able to reach her, that means I can create a pull for the product. So for example, even digitally, Amazon is a great new user channel. Nykaa is a great new user channel. Quick commerce is a replenishment channel. In fact, quick commerce, any data from Blinkit, etc., majority of their categories, people are searching for the brand. People don't just search for
skincare
or serum or moisturizer. They're searching for the brand. Like Dove body wash is one of their most searched categories, at least for Blinkit, right? Searched words for Blinkit. So pull is very critical. So and it's exactly what we are seeing is we see a lot more new user acquisition on Nykaa and Amazon. And with Blinkit, we are seeing a lot more replenishment buys that end up happening for us. So I think for us, hence we are I would say we are channel agnostic. It is critical for us to be in all of these channels because you're talking to very different life cycles of the user when you are talking to them. Similarly, in Amazon, you're talking to a 500 ASP user, and in Nykaa, you're talking to a 1500 ASP user. Nykaa is dominated by serums and sunscreen. Amazon, there's room for you to grow moisturizers and face wash. So category dominance is different. Life cycle of the user is different. So for us, it depends. So hence, Amazon, I will always, if I launch something, a Q-commerce will never probably get an exclusive launch because there will be no pull in the product. Habit formation products like a cleanser and moisturizer, you will get much better prices. You will get much better offerings when it comes to Q-commerce versus any other channel for us.
Yeah.
So that is a critical for us. Second is offline versus online. It's a ever going debate. We are 80%, we are in fact 90% digital business. We are very proudly 50% our own website. On month, we vary between 45 to 50, but we've been able to maintain the largest share of website. And that's where all of these theses doesn't stand true because we get new users also, we get repeat users. At the scale that we've achieved, we still get 50% users that come through repeat, but we are acquiring new users at a faster rate month on month. So I think website is like your own ecosystem. I still don't have a thesis that whether it will be a new user or replenishment because
you're getting both today.
We are getting both and we want both, right? Otherwise, unit economics will not make sense beyond the point. But that is something that, you know, that is an ecosystem that has a very isolated being of its own. Good thing we've been able to maintain it. Do I see that changing in the next 1 year? No, I don't. I still think we will be 45 to 50% website. But between marketplaces, I think kudos to everyone who's building this ecosystem digitally. But we are getting to be able to have channels like Q-commerce as well as acquisition channels like Nykaa and Amazon. Offline is still relatively nascent for us. I am not a believer of not offline. I just think it's a lot more thought through channel that needs to be built through because of working capital. And we've had our own learnings there. And today, very proudly, our receivable days there is 20-25, right?
That's very good.
Yeah. And we didn't have such good numbers at some point of time. So we've been able to work on that while growing the channel month on month by a huge amount. In fact, the business has doubled between September and doubled at a secondary, tertiary level between more than doubled, three times.
Actually, you told me something very interesting about offline maybe a couple of months back. That is the only channel which actually improves economics over time. So maybe just for the audience, talk a little bit about that as well.
So the economics of offline is fully driven by sales officer productivity. When we started the business, sales officer productivity is what he ends up selling in the tertiary markets to the retailers. So it's a combination of new stores that he ends up opening and the repeat stores. Majority of what they end up doing is they naturally optimize for repeat store because if a retailer likes the product, he will keep purchasing. In fact, you have to push them to go into new stores and open up new stores. And when that happens, so when you start a business, you're paying a SO roughly what? 20 grand to anywhere to 35 grand. When he starts in the business, he gives 20,000 per SO. But if your business done well, within 6 months, it becomes 1.5 lakhs. And within 18 months, it becomes as close to 5 lakhs. So at a 30,000 number, you are ending up getting a much higher
So there's operating leverage that kicks in.
Yeah, because you break even with channel margin, you break up at 60 grand per SO. Anything above that, like today we are at 1.5 lakhs. So it's a very beautiful, it's a 17%, 18% EBITDA channel.
So Romita, coming back to this 1,000 crores. There's a 1,000 crore 20% EBITDA margin goal.
Yeah.
It's not just ambitious, but it's very specific. So where does that come from? And it's obviously very exciting for investors. And you've talked about it from before you started the company. So where does that come from?
I remember the way it started for me and where I think... So one of the dinners I'd gone in my previous VC fund, they'd done this, one of the partners had asked this question that what do you want to be if not this in the ideal state? And when it came to me, I said, I want to be the CEO of P&G.
Yeah.
And I can't be the CEO of P&G. So I think I'm trying to build one in a own way and own fashion. But having said that, a company that I've respected a lot long before I wanted to be an entrepreneur, even realized that, is P&G. And there are a lot of books written on P&G by the CEOs, by external, internal people. And one of the key wins of P&G, when they define how they end up defining whether they have won a category, whether it's regional category or whether it's category, is this 1,000 crore number.
Okay.
So they believe that a consumer brand is of relevance when it becomes 1,000 crore.
Wow.
Anything below that is not relevance. And a lot of CEOs of P&G believe that. So for them, it was how much time they spend in building that 1,000 crore versus anything else. And like any investor, I think I've been from this DNA, for us, it makes sense. We know ROCE, ROE, all of these numbers start making sense when it's 20% EBITDA plus company. That number was so deeply ingrained in where value creation as a consumer brand you can do. The number of households you can impact, the number of market share that you can end up taking in the category you are working with, and the kind of returns on capital that you will put into the business. It's not just about investors or me. It's just the value creation that the business stands for.
Sure.
Because at the end of the day, business A talks to consumers. At 1,000 crore, you have a set of consumer where you've created impact. Second team, when you've done 20% EBITDA with 1,000 crore, you've created a team that can create something sustainable without the requirement for raise money, that can completely sustain with the ups and downs of the market. And third is shareholders, right?
Sure.
So that is where the ROCE makes sense for us to be able to make value for investors. So that's how the number was there.
So how many years are we getting there? You've learned from the CEOs of P&G.
3 years.
three years from now.
Yeah.
That will be incredible. Fingers crossed. Don't want to jinx it.
Yeah.
It's been fabulous. But tell us, maybe just as we close this, you've had, I'm sure, lots of ups and downs through the journey. Maybe narrate one incident where it was truly something that memorable, cherishable, and one where you thought, yo, this is not worth it.
I think as I have built this, Rajat, I think the one thing that changed for me, and a lot of people who will get into this journey will also, and who have gone through this journey, is you develop a sense where very few things impact you, because you know, you can't wait. Like, you know, in VC, we had like 6 months review session. Then as an analyst, we would put money. I don't think ever I will get to know what we, outside in, I will get to know, right? Banking, it's getting a deal through. So feedback loop was very extended, but you still have a lot higher need for a sense of validation, especially our backgrounds, right? Like, come first in class,
type
report card, reviews.
Yeah.
How does the boss feel about, partner feel about you, right? But when I started for the first year, I had no sense of value. There was nothing. There's no one. So you learn to find motivation within you. Slowly, the team started expanding and revenue started coming. And revenue is a every second thing. If I start, revenues are only report card for the initial few years, then it's profitability. But the reality is, if you start obsessing with that report card, there is no way you can build something, because har minute fir wahi dekhte rahenge, what is our Shopify revenue, what is our Amazon revenue, etc. So hence that motivation, that strength to look at a long term while solving for short term is something entrepreneurship teaches you by itself. But the thing that I did not know, and the thing that impacts me positively, or, you know, if it has ever to put me, is people. By people, I mean my team. So I think the highs are highs with them. The lows are lows with them. There's so many moments, but if I have to think, touching, it will be something. Like, I remember very early on, first year, there was some issue, concern that happened, and we'd not yet launched, and we had some work that was happening on the legal side. We'd let go some one employee and some issue was happening with. And I remember I was on calls. Like, I was 26. I didn't know what legal is. I was trying to figure it out, right? And I had not prepared myself to do all of this. I had prepared myself to build. So there are things that happen, right? And that was the first time I was dealing with something. So I was closed in a room, and all day I was doing that. And that time we had a very small space. We had like two small cabins. One, I was doing these calls with lawyers and different people. And one, I had 4-5 people. And I remember they all felt very impacted that, you know, this one day. And suddenly at 7 o'clock, I get a tea because I had not eaten. Then I suddenly at 9 p.m. get Maggie. Then I was in calls till 1 a.m. and I didn't realize my team was sitting outside. And when I left, I'm like, what are you guys doing here? They're like, no, we thought you were really into some trouble and we wanted to be around just in case you needed. So I think, and that's not changed till now. Luckily, with time you get more thick skin, so things you don't get even stressed in general about
sure.
But people are there to have your back, and that's something I don't know about everyone, but my team does a touch wood, an insane job of the way they have my back. So a lot of times, like, you know, even if I have felt any disagreement outside world, I felt no sense of lack of an army, if I may say. They've always had my back. And lows are also somehow, if anything,
team-related.
Is concerned to them. I recently had a second employee who joined us, Aditi. Mm. She recently left because she's moving to Delhi. And it was something that I knew was happening. But the day she talked to me about it, I think it was one of my... After, like, this has been a critical year for the company. So much has happened. But that is the day I went home and I said, this is because, and when I wrote to her on the last day, I said that, you know, I used to think how it will feel when my first set of people go. And this, she was the first one after 3 years. And it feels lonely because that first set of people mean a lot. Yeah.
So, listen, Romita, this has been outstanding. Thank you for doing this. This is, you're very inspirational. Your journey from, as I said earlier, Ranchi to where you've come here over the years, for all budding entrepreneurs, for women in the workforce, it's very inspiring, and we are lucky to be investors. So thank you for all that you've done. Fingers crossed, and for the journey ahead, onwards and upwards.